Retronauts is part of the HyperX Podcast Network. Find us and more great shows at podcast.hyperx.com. This week on Retronauts, we talk about the non-biblical superstar. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Retronauts. I'm your host for this one, Bob Mackey, and today's topic is Kirby Part 2. We did Kirby Part 1 back in the fall of 2021, and now we're back to talk about the next three Kirby games in the Kirby pantheon, and those games are Kirby Superstar, Kirby's Dream Land 3, and Kirby 64, the Crystal Shards. I'm experiencing a real Kirbysance here in my own personal life. We'll talk more about that later. Before I begin, who is here with me today? Let's first introduce the patron who has sponsored this episode. He also was on the first Kirby episode. Patron, please let us know who you are and your love of Kirby.
Andrew Oliveira, and I mean, I love it enough to fund this, so
yes.
Here we are.
And we are in the we're now in the wake of the newest Kirby game, so it's a great time to talk about Kirby. Who is our overseas correspondent on the line here?
Hello, I am host and regular talker of crap, Stuart Jip, and I am from the Great Cave Offensive's inspiration, England.
Okay. And who else do we have?
Poo-poo-poo-poo! Hey, it's Henry Gilbert.
Kirby's pooing all over the place, yes. But it means something different. we're going to be talking about the next three games in the series, and I am taking over for Jeremy on this series, and I never gave my Kirby history, although I did a Kirby episode back in 2011. The newest game back then was Kirby Mass Attack. That's a really cool game, by the way, so play that if you've never played it before. It's a really different Kirby game. But I could tell you my Kirby story is I had some interest in the character when the Game Boy game came out. A friend's little brother had it for his Game Boy, and I played it, and I was like, oh, this is kind of simple. It's not as sophisticated as Mario or Sonic. But then Nintendo Power had coverage of Kirby's Adventure in the magazine, and I was like, well, this game looks really cool. It looks even better than Mega Man because you can kind of switch powers on the fly in the level. And it felt very weird to ask for an NES game in 1993 while I was enjoying my Super Nintendo, but I got Kirby's Adventure for my birthday that year, and I really loved Kirby throughout the 90s. And then I kind of missed out on Kirby because my budget dictated the kinds of games I bought, and that's why I became a fan of RPGs, because I didn't have a lot of money until kind of shockingly recently. So that's why I became a fan of RPGs. So just the idea of paying 50 or 60 bucks for like a 8-hour Kirby game seemed crazy to me. Now it's like the best idea ever. I love these shorter, easier games. But because of that, I missed about like 15 years of Kirby games. And to be fair, some of those weren't great. There were some okay remakes. There were some things that were farmed out. But now I'm back on board. I'm replaying all the Kirby games. And I'm very, very excited to talk about these three. Although I'm not the biggest fan of two of them, but I still think they're pretty interesting games. So, is there anything else any refresher we need to go over before we jump into this Kirby discussion again?
Yeah, I mean, this is recording this after playing Forgotten Land, like it again really recalibrated my enjoyment, refreshed my enjoyment of Kirby. Like, I guess it shows you how old the Switch is that they're like, okay, it's time. It's 5 years in, time for a mainline Kirby game on a console. But
except this is the first time a console is not like being buried. You know, it's still selling, outselling everything. So just like, oh no, do we have to make another one of these?
Yeah, they're gonna have to have Forgotten Land too. But yeah, I mean, it reminded me like, oh yeah, I love this about Kirby. Kirby games are still where it's at, and yeah, also I'm so happy to be on the second one of these because when we I was on the previous one with Andrew and we almost got to Superstar, which is my favorite, and I was like, I want to talk about this, but we ran out of time, so now is Henry's time to shine.
It is a really good one, and yeah. No, you're right, like Kirby games almost always close out a console, and we'll talk about like two of those on this podcast. But yeah, like the Wii had a really late one, like in 2011 or 2012. The DS had one in 2011. Like 3DS had one in like 2017 or 2018. Wii U had a late one too. That one's pretty cool. But yeah, this one, I feel like there's going to be at least like three or four more years of Switch viability. So they need to make another Forgotten Land or something like that.
Epic Yarn 3 Perhaps, sir. I could go. That'd be cool. I could go for another Rainbow Curse. That was
really, that was a great game.
I love that one. More. Imagine the claymation graphics on a Switch at that point.
But it doesn't ship with a stylus. What are you going to do?
Oh man,
rub your greasy hand all over that. You're going to ruin the screen. I always forget the Switch. You can just touch the screen whenever you want, and sometimes things will happen to it.
Mm-hmm. I never bother, except playing the 3D World remake was the last time I was like, oh yeah, wait, I can do that on this thing. Yeah.
But yeah, so we're kind of closing off the Masahiro Sakurai trilogy of Kirby games, because there's Kirby's Dream Land, Kirby's Adventure, and Kirby Superstar. He will still be like a producer, and he'll direct Kirby's Air Ride, or maybe it's called Kirby Air Ride. But after Kirby Superstar, he is like the Smash Brothers dude for the rest of time. He will be buried while still working on Smash Brothers. They'll have to take the mouse out of his hand, but this is kind of where he passes the torch to Shinichi Shimomura, and he started with Kirby's Dream Land 2. I don't know if I like his iteration of Kirby as much as Sakurai. In fact, I know I don't. I don't think they're bad. I think he kind of misunderstands Kirby, and we'll talk more about that later. That's only my personal feeling, but I guess we should kick things off by talking about Kirby Superstar. And this was a very late release for the Super Nintendo, and it was releasing on the cusp of the N64. People were freaking out about the N64. They were trying to find pre-orders. It'd be coming out that October, and this game released in America on September 20th, 1996. And Andrew, up front, what are your thoughts about this one? Henry says it's his favorite. I think it's an interesting sandbox for different Kirby ideas, and I do like a lot of what's going on here. What do you think, Andrew? And even Stuart, too, you can jump in.
I think that, you know, it's a lot of people's favorites, and, you know, it sort of sets the tone for the mainline Kirby games going forward. I think, you know, it stands on the same level of Link to the Past and Super Metroid, where it took what made the NES version great and made it way better, and they're like, okay, so this is what this is going forward.
Yeah, it does fall in line with a lot of the 16-bit remakes, in quotes, where Link to the Past is sort of improving on the original Legend of Zelda, and even this game is seeing what they can do with Kirby's Adventure and even Kirby's Dream Land in a different format with better graphics. Stuart, what do you think about Kirby Superstar?
Well, this is the interesting thing about Kirby is this one used to be my favorite. And then they brought out better Kirby games like later, like this string of really amazing Kirby games on the Wii and on the 3DS, etc. But Superstar isn't really any kind of slouch at all. It's I feel like nowadays the sort of smaller games that are present in it, none of them are really long enough for me to particularly get my teeth into. So it does feel a little kind of fragmented in that respect, but it is meant to be like that. So I can't really criticize it for that. Like I really enjoyed Meta Knight's Revenge. I think that's still very original and very cool. But I guess we'll talk about them in detail rather than get into it now. It's good. I like it. I like Kirby's Adventure slightly more because I feel like it's a more complete, coherent experience. Mm. And it's incredibly impressive for an NES game, as we talked about on the last one. But Superstar is really great, and the DS remake is probably better.
Okay, so yeah, I really liked Superstar when it came out, but it was... I wasn't advanced enough of a gamer to really appreciate what it was doing and all the just how much was packed into it and all the fun that the developers were having, like the sense of humor and style to it. I could really appreciate on the Ultra remake for 3DS and or DS. And so when I played that, that's when I really realized what I loved about it. And it is that what didn't super catch me with the original Kirby games, or why I viewed them as little brother games, I think, as I detailed them before, was that they seemed short. They feel short, and if you don't try to 100% them, they are a little short. Having Kirby Superstar, it's like, oh, especially starting with Spring Breeze, if this is like, oh, see, you thought a Kirby game short? Yeah, this one's like, you know, 10 minutes tops. Mm-hmm. Just like there, you zip through it, want to play the next one. It's also kind of short, but they all add up to is a huge game full of stuff. And on top of that, it has so much of the Sakurai design sensibility that as a Smash player as well, or as someone who played Smash a bunch in the past, I also really, really love about the style of Superstar.
Yeah, definitely. I can see a lot of Sakurai's future work in Smash Brothers in this game. And I think like some of the novelty that's lost maybe in 2022 is that it was once a huge novelty to be able to finish a video game, even as late as 1996. Like, how many games did you own that you just didn't finish? How many games did you rent that you didn't finish? Some games were too hard or unfair to finish. The fact that there were like six games in here, technically, you can just sit down and finish, was like fun and interesting. Like, this just was something new. And now every game is designed to be finished by anyone, except for maybe like Elden Ring or like Bloodborne or whatever. But back then it was still like a real novelty. And yeah, talking about Smash Brothers, Henry, starting this game, it's just like, well, this menu is basically every Sakurai game menu.
Yes,
just like,
yeah,
different windows of different sizes, like a very fun menu to look at. And then we'll talk more about it later, but the roots of like the fighting game are in this. And it's even like he states it in interviews, like, I can see Smash Brothers control scheme coming out of Kirby Superstar, with every different hat you have and can wear in this game has different moves depending on if you're in the air, if you're guarding, if you're ducking, if you're dashing. And that's why I'm not a huge fan of the next two games, because they drop that completely in exchange for in theory a more interesting idea, but it's not as fast paced and technical as what's going on here.
Moving on from Kirby's Adventure, where as much as I love that game, every single absorbability has one application more or less. In here, as you mentioned, there are so many that have so many different powers, like, and some of them even do use commands like down up Y to use the yo-yo to sort of spin upwards. Is a very powerful move. The whole thing with the plasma, where you need to keep moving around like you're shuffling your feet to build up static electricity, is one of the most powerful things in the game. There's just a lot in there. And combined with the sort of Sakurai-style presentation, which is very much, I don't know what the correct word is, maximalist. It's just very excessive in a good way.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Because it's like how every game has been made to feel kind of distinctive, with its own distinct title screen and music. And even I think the HUDs are quite different in a lot of cases as well. It all feels just like a real important package. I think in the European release, they renamed this Kirby's Fun Pack, which kind of sells the fact that it's a set of individual games a little bit more. But it's quite a bad name, Kirby's Fun Pack. You'd think you were getting like a compilation of old existing games or something. Or like just a two-pack of something else.
It sounds
it's just a load of brand new stuff.
It sounds like a collection of like little cereal boxes to me or something.
Yeah. With the naming too, you might accidentally trick people into thinking I get a series of remakes like Super Mario All-Stars, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
like that you think it's, yeah. I think until I saw some of the commercials at the time in 96, I maybe thought it was like, there's so many Kirby. I mean, it was like, there were so many Kirby games on the Game Boy. I maybe thought it was just another remake or port. The commercial, it's funny you say that about the overstuffedness of it, because that was in America the Play It Loud style commercial of a giant pink boy is taken to the hospital because he's overstuffed with too much Kirby TMK. That's what he's diagnosed with.
And you know what? That boy, that was me.
And you survived. Yeah, Stuart, you're talking about like the maximalist design of the game. And yeah, I totally forgot about how like technically complex the different powers are, because they're not all this complex, but you'll get the power and then you can hit pause to see like, well, here's what you can do. Sometimes there are like three pages of information as to like every different input you can do and different information about like how the powers work. So yeah, really neat. Let's talk about the production of this game. So first prototype for the Famicom, moved to Super Famicom, and had quite a bit of development behind it, because during the development of this game, Donkey Kong Country came out, and it sounded like they basically threw out all the graphics, or a lot of the graphics they had so far, to introduce pre-rendered graphics, which are not as garish as what you see in Donkey Kong Country. I think on a 4K TV, these age much better, though you can still tell they were pre-rendered.
They were used more for the backgrounds and the ground, like the terrain, rather than the characters. Is that right? The characters look very much like sprites to me, like normal sprites.
Yes, they're very crisp.
The pre-rendered, yeah.
They're very crisp sprites. If Kirby was just like kind of like a mushy animated GIF blob, I wouldn't be into this game. Like, it should be stated also, this is a great looking game. Kirby looks so good. Every hat he wears, every color he changes. I like the smaller face on like initial Kirby, but I can live with the bigger face on this just like glowing pink little adorable boy.
Yes. No, and every costume.
And this is the introduction of hats too, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess there were no hats in Kirby's Adventure. A few of the powers would probably change him colors, I believe. Not all of them, but this, everything you do has a different hat on it, basically.
No, his costume design is so great. And also, I just love that every power also, talk about menus, like every power you have is then also a thing in the menu on the bottom. Like it's, you know, a different outfit. Yeah. Or even getting hit, it's a drawing of Kirby going, ouch. And then he's like in pain. Like there's just so, it has this, you know, definitely comic book or comic strip sensibility of just like, it's even more of the gag comic style humor brought into Kirby, which fits, because like he, you know, design sensibility fits a lot with kids comics of Japan, that so getting even more of that style in the little drawings of the other mascots or enemies in there too is a real vibe.
I think we definitely lost that when this game got rid of when the series got rid of UI, as most games did, so you don't get the cool like little cartoon picture of Kirby doing something, or like when you die it says whoops or whatever, or I forget what he says.
And it's also like the mix of Sakurai's Kirby has so much of the, like what I love of the mix of extreme cuteness with also like cruel gameplay sensibility. You're almost just like, hey, yeah, we're not taking it easy on you. This samurai match is hard. Like you better hit this button right on time, but not too early. Like, yeah, he can be mean, but also have the friendliest, nicest, happy face in the world, right in right up front.
There's a moment. Go ahead, Stuart. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. All I was going to say is I think that something that Sakurai sort of brought forward from this game and his others is the idea that like being overpowered and the game being incredibly unbalanced is fun as hell. Like, you can get your challenge from this game if you want to take on the arena, for example, without any copy abilities. You can make your own difficulty, but most of the time it's you with a helper who are both absolutely just destroying everything on the screen.
Yeah.
And they sort of make up for that by throwing in more enemies on the screen than ever and more interesting variants of the bosses. But I mean, this is not particularly difficult in terms of getting to the end or playing with a partner, but that's not really the point. It's all about the power fantasy almost.
Oh, definitely.
Meta Knight's Revenge sort of feeds into that with the whole running commentary of Kirby systematically destroying the halberd and everyone on it, while everyone increasingly panics as they realize it's hopeless and they can't possibly stop him.
I feel like in this game, there is just enough pushback for it to not be boring. But yeah, it definitely is a power fantasy. It is just fun to rampage through these levels and lay waste everything. And last month I was so busy and I wanted to play Elden Ring, but I did not want to play Elden Ring at the end of a long day of like work. So I would just play Kirby Triple Deluxe in bed, and just, there was just enough pushback for it to be fun, but it was also fun to just destroy everything on the screen easily. And just, these games feel fun to play. Like the feedback to the player is just excellent. And that's the hallmark of a Sakurai game. Mm-hmm.
Make room for huge plays with the HyperX Alloy Origin 65 mechanical gaming keyboard and the Pulsefire Haste wireless mouse. The Alloy Origin 65 has a functionally compact form factor, keeping the arrow keys while ditching the numpad and the F keys. The Pulsefire Haste is the lightest wireless mouse from HyperX, featuring a robust connection and the precision you need to click heads. The Alloy Origin 65 and Pulsefire Haste wireless, a terrific twosome to keep your setup clean and clutter-free.
So, in Japan, is this game called Kirby Superstar in Japan, or is it Kirby Super Deluxe in Japan?
I couldn't be no Super Deluxe.
Oh, Super Deluxe. Okay, so I guess Triple Deluxe.
Kirby Super Deluxe.
Yeah. Okay, I guess Triple Deluxe, the 3DS game, is like a play on that. But that, in Japan, it came out in a special like wooden box with like a burned, like wood burned logo to signify the quality of the product.
That is sick.
That one's so bad.
Yeah.
What normally comes in those boxes? Like treats or cigars or...
I definitely think of it as a fancy gift box, yeah, that you'd get, that you would give to somebody, or, you know, like sake perhaps is kept in there, or liquor. But yeah, I think I see it as, you know, a very... I imagine it in an old samurai film as like a gift is given to the emperor in, or to the shogun in one of those boxes.
He gets a collection of Kirby games. And I believe I was reading interviews, and Shigesato Itoi, the creator of the Mother series, he was floating around HAL. He's probably, you know, working on Mother at the same time this game was in development. That was his idea, I believe. And also, I believe he helped name the game. Do you know anything about that, Andrew?
No.
Okay. Yeah, I was reading an interview with Sakurai. I think it was when the SNES Classic was released, and that was like 5 years ago. So it was like, can you believe Kirby's 25? And I think like he is literally turning 30 the week after we do this podcast, Kirby's Dream Land.
No,
I just can't believe this SNES Classic is 5. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, and I still have an open mind.
I bought that 20th anniversary Wii collection, and now that's 10 years old now, man. It's sitting around here somewhere over there.
It's collecting in value.
I really wanted that. I was really excited about that. They never bothered to release it in the UK, so that was fun for me.
Didn't most of the game, all three of the games we're talking about today, come out way later in the UK? Like, yeah, you got this one 6 months after us.
Apparently,
Yeah, I was going to ask about.
What happened is Nintendo saw that it was a good compilation and good value, and they were just like nixing it. They were like, nah, maybe you just put the ROM for Kirby's Adventure on there and charge 50 quid. That would be enough.
You'll get it later, you Sega likers. What happens next is that in development, Sakurai has like three different pillars of mind for, development. Co-op, I believe, was something Miyamoto wanted him to have. Like, Miyamoto always wanted co-op in the Mario series. He eventually got it, but I don't think it's very good. Sorry.
And, ups and downs.
It's more like it's so adversarial and it makes the game not fun. I'm not a big fan of New Super Mario Bros. You probably know that, though.
I think, you know, after 15 years in Bowser's Fury, they finally got that was the most I've loved co-op ever in a Mario game. That was really, really fun with Bowser Jr. helping you out. That was a good game.
Okay. I didn't know about that.
That was the first time I really loved it. It's a great I played it with my spouse. Me and him had a really good time with it. I think it's a good spouse game for folks out there. Try it yourselves if you got a spouse.
And starting from here, all the games basically, outside of a few exceptions, have co-op where it's like buddy mode or helper mode. There are other things you can call this that are more insulting that I won't say that other people have said in the past. But yeah, it's just like a way for a second player to jump in without a lot of extra friction. Like it's sort of like almost playing as Tails in Sonic 2 where you can help out and stuff, but you're not, your death does not affect them in any way. And how well you're playing does not affect them in any way.
I think they want to cause as few arguments as possible on the couch with your friend. Yeah.
I played through almost all of Kirby Star Allies with my wife. Not a single argument to be had about anyone's skill.
Kirby Superstars co-op mode it's insane how dynamic I find it. Like everything about it, the way that you throw your own ability hat and the screen almost kind of freezes in a dramatic style as you throw it at your friend who then catches it and transforms. The fact that when they run out of health, they don't just disappear. They just explode. They tick over for absolutely ages and then they explode.
And I think
there's something incredibly exciting about that.
And I think if they explode by an enemy whose ability they can steal, they'll just turn into that enemy too. It's like, it's very technically complex, like what can happen
with
them.
Cool.
And this is the Kirby game. And speaking of co-op, that introduces kissing.
I love the kissing. Yeah. Yes, I love the kissing and sharing of health. I mean, what fun.
That's why they call me the Kirby kisser.
What a fun dynamic of like, well, your health is low, mine's in the middle. Like, it's so different from, you know, say, all the classic beat 'em ups we remember of like, oh, the pizza's on the ground. I'm getting the pizza, not you. Like instead,
so many little brothers were bludgeoned to death over Ninja Turtle pizzas.
And instead, Spirit.
Oh, now it's more like I'll take the pizza, chew the pizza up, and regurgitate and put the pizza into your mouth.
You're sharing pizza and the health in that way. That's what I love. The spicy curry or whatever.
I think when I rented this at the tender young age of 14, and that happened for the first time, I was like, wait a minute, no, they're not doing this right. And then it kept happening, and I was like, oh, I guess this is just what this game is. And the kissing, maybe that's why I don't like Kirby's Dream Land 3 And Kirby 64, no kissing in those games. None that I can find. I tried.
Is that pink ball kissing no that kissing. Blue ball? Because if he is...
Garbage.
Quit kissing that cat. And also, we brought it up before. So the first pillar is co-op. Miyamoto wanted co-op. He couldn't make it work in Mario Brothers. He eventually tried. I think even like Mario 64 was like, yeah, it's going to be a Mario and Luigi game with a split screen. Way too ambitious for what they were trying to do. So they got rid of that. Fighting game moves. We talked about that, in which a lot of the abilities, most of them have like an up B attack, a down B attack, a dashing attack. There's guarding in this game. Guarding works just like it does in Smash Brothers. The prototype for what we'll see in Smash Brothers is happening here, and it's surprising how many things you can do with these characters. I think you can even ride your buddies in this game.
I think so,
too.
Yeah, when they're taking on Wheelie, there's a whole exciting dramatic escape sequence using that towards the end of one of the games as well.
Yes, it's cool. Smash Brothers, its gameplay doesn't make sense if you're just thinking like somebody designed a fighting game from the ground up saying, I'm making a fighting game. But if you just see it as the natural extension of what Sakurai was having fun with a platformer that's getting more and more fighting game elements, and then he just it makes it inverse and have it be a fighting game with platformer elements, like then the gameplay in Smash makes so much more sense.
I really love the Smash Brothers series love of Kirby because you know who makes it.
Yeah.
And in the newest game, well, new, it's now like 4 years old, but still, it's like all the Nintendo characters were turned to stone, but the most powerful one survived, and that's Kirby. So yeah. You don't play as Mario in that in the story mode. You start as Kirby, the most important Nintendo character to exist.
No, I love that he...
If it was up to me, that would be it. Just, that's oh, well, they're all gone. We've still got Kirby. That's fine.
No big loss.
I mean, and the special thing, every time there was a new guest character of like, but what does Kirby look like? What does Kirby look like when he eats the new guest character? Like, yeah, Sakurai worked hard to make sure his special boy is still special to him. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's also, there's some people that they have their thing that made him a big hit and they'll be like, I can work on other stuff. I don't care as much about that old thing. But no, I like that you can tell he still loves Kirby very, very much.
And you can hear Sakurai's voice in this game. He would eventually voice King Dedede in later games, but he is the guy that has the final power up of the mic. You do it two times. It's the one where he goes Chesto, which is saying like "Hiya" or something like that. I guess that's what the localization is, but they didn't change it.
So that's like Miss Piggy going "Hiya,"
basically. there's a
good example of a legit funny joke in a video game is Kirby growing a mohawk and screaming Chesto. That's hilarious.
I like how all three of the attacks with the microphone are like a different version of Kirby doing a different thing. Like one is like a cheer, like he's at a baseball game or something.
That is so the Sakurai sensibility too, of just like, you know, if you drew one funny cool scream animation of like, what's a funny thing of, okay, let's draw a funny drawing of or make a funny sprite of Kirby shouting into a microphone. But then they're like, we want three different versions for different levels of intensity. Let's up it every time. And to even get you, it works in the like comedy rules of three that you're like, oh, okay, cute little Kirby. Then he gets louder and then he turns into a punk rock superstar just screaming on the screen. And they give it to you so early in Spring Breeze that you get to like play around with it and get used to the joke, so you really appreciate it. It's like, oh, this is an awesome power up. I can't wait to get it the next time and see what it can do and take half the life bar of the boss when I face him.
All it was that whole Maximus thing of like what you said, Henry, about there being three different sounds and three different sprites, completely unnecessary detail. But it's like when you get the stone power up and you can turn into about 10 different types of rock. There's no reason for that. Some of them appear so rarely. Like you'll get one that's like the Thinker, I think, maybe, or like a human statue will come out. You'll get one that's a statue of the Friends from Dreamland 2, I think. All that sort of thing. There's no need for it. He just throws it in because it would be fun. And it is. And it's things like that that make games memorable and loved forever.
Yeah, I mean, in the Great Cave Offensive, like, you're literally digging more and more just to find more of those secrets, because you're like, well, that was a funny joke in here. I have to find every other, like, weird reference that he stuck in this thing. Just I'm sure there's got to be some other crazy thing I'm missing that got hidden in here. If I just keep trying, I bet I'll uncover it.
When I played that, and we'll talk more about that later, but when I played it and I found Mr. Saturn, I thought, other people know about Earthbound? I didn't know that Hal helped make Earthbound. I just thought, like, oh, somebody else knows about this game except for me. They're referencing this game. And then I lost my mind even more when I found out that Ness was in the first Smash Brothers. But speaking of sound in this game, this is also very timely. So we're recording this in the wake of Kirby and the Forgotten World. And also, Kirby won a Grammy, or somebody covering a Kirby song won a Grammy, the 8-Bit Big Band group. They won the Grammy for Best Arrangement Instrumental or Acapella Song for the rearrangement of Meta Knight's Revenge. You can find it on YouTube. It's great.
Wow.
So Kirby covers are now winning Grammys. So the Grammys now mean something again, at least to me.
That's amazing. Man, I didn't know. I missed that news in all the Grammy news. Man, that's great.
And one last thing about development. Apparently, there was going to be something called Kagero Mansion in this game, like another variation of Kirby, and that we have later variations in this series where, in Superstar, where it's like you, I believe one of them is you select your powers once you obtain them, sort of like an Omega Man style. And this would be the opposite of that, in that you have no powers. So you have to get abilities from objects because your mouth is sealed shut. So some slight body horror going on there. But apparently, that was one of the games that didn't make the cut.
That's
so,
the opposite of mouthful mode.
Yes, yes. It's mouthless mode. And stop making dirty jokes about that, people. Kirby's an innocent little youth. He's a carefree youth, like a spring breeze.
We've had to hear for three dang decades, all the like, yeah, he sucks. We get it. Yeah.
But yeah, we talked about this before. We can talk a little bit more about it now. But the gameplay in the series, we have the helper mechanic. It's very neat in that if you have a power, you can hit the A button to basically pop out a version of that enemy you just swallowed, and it will fight alongside of you. And the computer can control that, or another player can control it. And that's like a way to make the game even easier and even more effortless if you want to, because even though the AI is pretty stupid, they will still just destroy anything in its path. And often they'll end up taking care of the boss for you without you doing much in return. So that's very neat, too. And it's so easy to get more of these helpers. And I believe you can turn them back into the power-up and then eat the power-up and then turn back into their power again. So it's very technical.
Yeah, you can, yeah.
And in Kirby's Dream Land 3, it gets even more technical. I think it's maybe a little too much, but just enough here to swallow. LOL, I understand. I know what I said. So Kirby can block, which is something I never do in this game, and I forget you can. But
yeah, if you're telling me now, like, oh, wait, yeah.
I would only block to charge up the spot, because you can hold R and mash the D-pad to do it really quickly. Some pro tips there from Stuart. Yep. Enjoy.
And some of the, like, maybe a few of the hats incorporate blocking into their moveset, but most of the time it's a Kirby game. You really don't need to block. Maybe if you're trying to do like a no-hit run or something, I don't know, but it's there if you want it. And so much variation on all of these different things you saw in Kirby's Adventure. Down attacks, up attacks, dashing attacks, charging attacks. Sakurai loves fighting games, and he's incorporating these moves into a much simpler version in Kirby. You're not doing quarter circle forwards. You're not doing like 360 turns on your D-pad, shredding your thumb up. It's just up and down, and that's what happens in Smash Brothers. It's very, very effortless. Mm.
Or some fighting game fans would say, too simple and baby. But
they're wrong. Let's talk about the different iterations of Kirby. Again, to me, this feels like, they spent a long time developing this, but it feels like how they made Kirby's Dream Land, they made Kirby's Adventure, they're making these like side projects like Kirby's the Kirby's Dream Course and Kirby's Pinball Land. They're like, okay, what else can we do with Kirby? And this is them just trying a lot while not really committing too much to anything. And maybe that makes it not my favorite Kirby game. Like, I want to see a commitment to an idea, but enough of these stick around for long enough to not wear out the welcome. So, you know, it's a fun experience overall.
One of these short games, you know, this was in the console era where, like, arcades are not as healthy. They can't make a game as short as Spring Breeze and sell that, or as short as the Meta Knight game. Like, and so they mini games, you just got to stuff them all into one game like this, or else you can't sell them as a singular game like they could do with, you know, the Kirby fighting mini game thing. They just sell that as a digital download now, but they didn't have that opportunity then.
Yeah, there's no marketplace for a very short game. Mm-hmm. They were all packaged in like $30 to $50. But Spring Breeze is basically just an even shorter version of Kirby's Dream Land, which was a very short game to begin with. They remove the castle Lololo stage, so you don't get to fight Lololo and La La La. And you have abilities as well, which I guess they were going to exclude and make it play more like the Game Boy game, but they didn't. So it's just like playing Kirby's Dream Land, except you have abilities, and it is very, very easy. Spring Breeze is evocative of just the kind of experience. And if you want to sit down and play Kirby game for 10 minutes and have a full experience, it's right here.
And it's a real trick if you came into the game thinking, like, if you are one of the people who thought this is for your dumb little brother, these Kirby games, these aren't for me, and you start with Spring Breeze, then you're like, yeah, see, this is the well, just what I thought Kirby was. These don't challenge you at all. And I think it lulls you into a false sense of security for the other games that come after it. If you're like, well, that's so easy, I'm going to start up Gourmet Race. Whoa!
When you get to Milky Way Wishes, you'll be eating your words.
Yes. Yeah.
But not much to say about this. It is just like a loose remake. And
very cute.
Yeah, it's very cute. And it's a good way to just jump into this game. Any thoughts on this one, Andrew? Do you have any feelings about Spring Breeze in general?
No, it's just tutorial at most, you know?
Yeah, it's a nice way to dip your toe into the Kirby world.
I do love when the game asks you, have you played a Kirby game before? And like, yes or no, like, just, and it's they even, that's also too, they in for 1996, when they were stamping out a lot of the specifically Japanese, like, cultural markers in Nintendo video games, Kirby retains more than most. Like, and that includes even on the, it's like circle or X on yes or no for the have you played a Kirby game before.
I prefer that. Actually, one thing they cut out,
like, your answer doesn't matter.
Yes,
exactly. Now, I like you can skip the tutorial, and like, I was reading about things they changed in localization, and one thing is, like, when you get the have you played a Kirby game before, like, do you want to learn about the copy ability thing, it's like two halves of Kirby come together. In Japan, that was like the trainee driver symbol, like the driver and training symbol. It's like a chevron that's like one half is green, one half is yellow, and it comes together. So
that
it's not
cool.
Like two halves of a living creature coming together. It's like the chevron. So there you have it. So
I have to say, it slightly annoys me that even if you select no, it still shows you the controls. But that's the most minor nitpick imaginable.
That is true. Hey, it's baby steps in 1996. I still hate that some games don't let you opt out of the tutorial.
I love it even so clearly. That's goes true. Like, this is the controller. It's that great thing in your hand. Like, yeah.
In fact, this is like the third time I'm bringing up Elden Ring, but I love how Elden Ring makes the tutorial seem like a trap.
They're very similar games.
Jump down in this cave to learn things. Like, no, no.
Yeah, I was sure it was tricking me, man. I didn't try. I was used to a meaner Souls game than that.
But let's talk about Dynablade. So this is a bird-based experience. The story is that Dynablade is ruining the crops of Dreamland. And it wraps up with Kirby defeating Dynablade, seeing all she was doing was trying to feed her chicks. And then Kirby, the good guy that he is at the end, spoilers, he nurses these chicks while she recovers from her Kirby-based injuries. So it's a
sweet.
Very, very sweet ending. Often Kirby has good intentions, but often he has the wrong target in mind. So he's like a single track mind. It's usually involving food.
In the end, he's usually somebody's friend. You know, that's what's always nice. Other than Dedede, which it's like, yeah, well, that guy's a jerk. You know.
And the gameplay is in terms of, I mean, it's like Spring Breeze in terms of, you know, general Kirby left to right, collecting things, eating things, gaining powers. There's the world map, and Andrew, I forget on this one, are there alternate paths in Dynablade? Because in Kirby's Adventure, the only secrets in the game were alternate paths that would open up other levels. Is that happening in Dynablade, or is that a later one of these?
No, Dynablade has two.
Okay. So it carries that over from Kirby's Adventure. And you know what? They're not that hard to find, but it's still like a little something extra to make this one more complex than Spring Breeze. And yeah, there's the goal game, the only one in Superstar, and it's the typical one you'd expect in that instead of the lowering and raising cloud that you usually see, it's a cannon that will launch you up to the top. And I don't know if they are thinking of getting rid of this in Kirby, but there would be one of these in every game afterwards. Like, you finish the game, you finish a level, and now here's a little mini game to play to see if you can get a 1-up or more stars or a magic tomato or whatever. And
there was an adventure also where you would bounce up on the cloud and whatnot.
Right. And
a specific level.
Yeah. I forget if it was in Dreamland, but I love just like the little fun mini game at the end of the level that gives you a reward if you have good timing. Folks, I like stopping meters. What can I say? So we have a few more, and we're going to speed through these a little faster because we have a few more games to cover.
I just want to say real quick, I think this is where, you know, Kirby canonically got the ability to share food.
Okay, yeah. That's right.
You know, that's my headcanon anyway.
Andy teaches us, sorry, I'm watching the end video, the end footage here. Like, he also teaches them to fly. Like, he goes in the air and he's using his puffer power to teach the birds to fly. He not only saves them and shares their food, but he also helps them fly.
They're simple, sweet. But I like the little cute endings on these. Yeah. But we have Gourmet Race. Oh, go ahead, sir.
Sorry, I was going to say, is it Spring Breeze that ends with Kirby turning into a hot air balloon and carrying Dee Dee's castle over the world, dropping all the sweets down on it? That's one of the best things I've ever seen in my entire life.
I think so. And we'll talk more about, is it Day 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 or DDD? Somebody help me out here.
I think it's DDD.
Okay.
Because I based that on the guy saying, King DDD!
Okay.
It's probably Day Day Day.
I will trust the Smash Brothers announcer, although I have Day 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 in my head. But it's funny to see, like, after this game, he becomes just like another fun friend. Mm-hmm. They're really reluctant to make him into the villain. And if he is the villain, it's like, well, he was being manipulated by, like, dark matter or whatever. So Day Day Day, one of the last times he'll actually be a true villain in the series in Spring Breeze.
He's a villain in Forgotten Land, but that's like an alternate DDD, so it doesn't count, I guess.
I love fighting him in
he's your friend in that as well. Never mind. You're completely right.
I also just love the
sorry for the spoilers.
At the end of Spring Breeze, I also love, as a pro wrestling fan, the wrestling ring and all the characters in the background, too. Like, it's
cool. So cool.
They managed to get in Nintendo characters.
Didn't ask the most permission.
I fleshed out from the ring in the Game Boy version of Kirby's Dream Land. It just makes so much cooler looking.
Mm-hmm. It's a great
so
little
detail. I love it.
It's a great little final boss fight. But Gourmet Race, it plays out a lot like the Sonic 2 multiplayer challenges, in that it's like you're on the top, someone else is on the bottom, you're racing to the end, you got to collect food, and this introduces like one of the more classic Kirby songs you hear in a lot of stuff. So it comes from so this. Good. I think the song is just called Gourmet Race, mm-hmm. I'm guessing, but that's it. It's like one of the, I think, three mini style games that aren't like full like platform experiences in this game.
I'm still not good at that game. I played it last night. I was like, all right, let's see if I've gotten any better. No, I'm just no good at Gourmet Race.
It's surprisingly hard. It's really quite difficult.
I think a lot of it is memorization. Just like you have to know what's coming up next.
Yeah, that's what I hate about Sonic games also.
It's very Sonic-like in that way. The Great Cave Offensive. So this is all about collecting things. I feel like this could have been fleshed out into a better experience. I think it's kind of neat the way it is, but there's no sense of where you are overall on this journey, and it's like sometimes I'm like, oh, I can't go back there now. I didn't know that. If this had a Super Metroid style map or something, it'd be kind of neat, but as it is, it's just a different interpretation of Kirby. Oh, Stuart, sorry.
Would it be fair to say they kind of did flesh it out for Kirby and the Amazing Mirror on the Game Boy Advance, which always felt to me like an expansion of this game, which was the full Metroidvania style Kirby. I mean, even though the map was an absolute nightmare, but at least there was a map, I guess.
Yeah, I think they were working from this idea, but I didn't play a lot of that game, but I heard that it was also not the best execution of this kind of,
It could be a lot better.
Contiguous world, yeah. But this game, it also feels like what would be the future for Smash Brothers, in that it's almost like a museum of Nintendo history.
Yes.
In that you have, like I said, there's like the Mr. Saturn from Earthbound, and like I think Ness's Hat is probably in it too. There's things from F-Zero, and there's things from unreleased games in America, like Mario. You can the famous bucket, everybody. Remember the bucket? but yeah, it's just a tour of Nintendo history, and like playing this in 96, I was like, wow, it's cool to see these things recognized that I thought were only important to me. Now we got a podcast about it, but 96, way different.
Now we're buried in trivia, and same with, I mean, too, this was like ahead of its time in giving a crap about this stuff, or letting Nintendo celebrate itself. I think Nintendo was less about that then, but though I guess a couple of years before this was the Mario All-Stars, I suppose. That's true.
Now all those children are old, and they want to talk about
old.
We all want to talk about Ness's Hat now. But, yeah, that's the Great Cave Offensive. And moving on to Revenge of Meta Knight, it's like, before, I had barely seen anime, but I got real anime vibes from this when I sat down to play it 20-whatever years ago, in that you are fighting the Kirby villain Meta Knight, and you're on his battleship. You're often knocked off of it and have to make your way back onto it. But the cool thing about this is that as you're playing, there is often like a commentary over your gameplay by the villains, who go from being very confident in destroying you to just freaking out. And how their portraits change. Yeah, how their portraits change over the course of the game, this little mini game, is very, very fun and cute. And like a surprising amount of dialogue for a Kirby game, who typically usually saves all their dialogue for the final, like, very weird boss you fight at the end. But here it's all kind of sprinkled throughout the game, and it's a very fun anime-style experience.
I love the anime style, and the speed of it, too. Like, it's fast. I mean, it fits, too, because Meta Knight is such an anime rival character, you know? Like, that's what he was invented to be, which is what I love about him. And yeah, that it can't be done. I forgot that until preparing for this, that it doesn't unlock until after you've done the Dynablade one, because you save the bird, and the bird is key to the Meta Knight storyline.
Right. Does the bird show up to save you at the end? I forget. It's been a while since I played this one.
I think it flies you back onto the Halberd at one point, because they shoot down Dynablade.
That's right.
In the process. That's one of the things that made me think that maybe the four mainline games here are all somehow basically one game. Kind of, a bit. Because of those little connections. Like, I think Milky Way Wishes has some throwback stuff as well.
Well, and Dynablade also ends with, like, a to be continued on the credit, or on the end screen. Like, that's so cool, too. Yeah, I mean, it is, like, the extreme drama of it. And also, like, and the Revenge of Meta Knight logo is such a great logo. Like, it looks like it was, it's like a Ninja Gaiden for NES-style logo. Like, it's an NES-intense logo.
Yeah. I love how everything has a different logo. It's not just, like, plain text and, like, a menu. It's just, like, everything, like, different sizes to indicate sort of, like, the scope of the game, too. But that's Revenge of Meta Knight, a very fun little experience. And then the biggest and most challenging one on the cart is Milky Way Wishes. The Sun and the Moon are fighting, and this is all about a new character named Marx, who will make appearances in the future. This is an anti-Marxist game, by the way, people. And so basically the way this works is that Kirby, in this game, you can't copy abilities by inhaling enemies. It's more like Mega Man in that you have to not defeat bosses to get the abilities, but find these items. And you then, once you have the item associated with that ability, you go into your menu and you select it. I think it's an interesting variation. I just didn't like it that much, because basically once I got the hammer, I was like, well, I'm done. I don't need to find anything else.
Yeah.
But
no, I'm not crazy about the way it front loads the first level, which is an ordeal. It's like a maze of identical rooms that you just go through the sort of different seasons over and over with almost no sense of adventure or design. And that's like the first level. It's just this going through doors into rooms that look exactly the same. And you have to basically memorize the way through it. I don't enjoy door mazes very much.
Is that the...
Putting one right at the beginning of the game was not a great move, in my opinion.
Is that the one where the seasons change when you go through the doors?
Yeah, the seasons change, okay. And you get the frozen water. And it's a cool idea. It's not horrible or anything. It's just, I don't think it's the best first level. Because at that point, it would be nice to sort of, you've been stripped of all your powers. So I suppose maybe it makes more sense than giving you an enemy gauntlet. which you can't handle. But yeah, I wasn't crazy about it.
Yeah, I like the
finale of that game is amazing.
It is. Oh, yeah, yeah, I like the idea of the seasons changing, but it's not the best execution of it. And I believe the end of this one, like the end of a lot of Kirby games, is a shmup. It's a shooter. And I feel so bad for Hal because Kirby games started releasing just around the time shooters were dead. I feel like out of all the Kirby games they made, all the Kirby variations they made, they couldn't make a shooter, and I think they've always wanted to, because there's always like a shoot 'em up stage in every Kirby game, and I know they want to do this, but they just can't find a way to do it.
Yeah. And in Mass Attack, it's one of the best mini games as well. There's like a fairly full featured 3-level shmup in there you can play, if memory serves. It'd be cool.
I think there's even like an RPG in Mass Attack as well.
No, there's, man,
there's an RPG boss battle in Kirby Superstar.
Yeah, that is very cool. And it's another one of those moments when I was a kid playing this thinking, other people know about these things? Where you have like the battle windows of an RPG. If there's a few boss fights in this game that are like that. And when it's the enemy's turn, when it's your turn to attack, the enemy leaves the box and you can attack them, and then jumps back in and it says how many hit points you've done. And then Kirby levels up when you defeat the boss, and he levels up in all these point categories that you don't actually have. It's very adorable. But again, I was like, other people know about RPGs, not knowing that Hal helped put together Earthbound. So, yeah.
No, there's the person that comes through. Yeah, I don't think Milky Way Wishes. Milky Way wasn't my favorite either, but it is like the densest thing in the game. It's like the closest. Mm-hmm. If you were to take one out and sell it as a game by itself, like I would guess that would be the one that could do it. But yeah, and also the one when you beat Milky Way Wishes, you get the biggest, truest credits, and they even design special Kirbys for the credits. Like when it gets to Chief Programmer, it's a it's a Kirby in front of a computer. When it's for Sakurai and Director, it's Kirby with a director hat on and the, like, you know, the cut, the clapboard, the whiteboard thing for filmmaking.
I want to play as the Director Kirby. We need like these different Kirbys in the game. Any thoughts about this one, Andrew? We're going to wrap up our Kirby's Superstar discussion pretty soon.
Yeah, this one actually is my favorite of all of them.
Mm.
I mean, story-wise, it's the best written, I think. And, you know, the powers, where you find them, it all makes sense, as, you know, considering their environments. I think, you know, not to open something we were talking about before recording, but Milky Way Wishes sort of fixes the problem of disrespecting your time when you're trying to solve a complex puzzle involving powers and having to restart the level repeatedly. I think mixing the ability to keep your powers and have that puzzle focused gameplay would be a good mix.
Oh, you know what? You're totally right about that, because when we get to the next two games, the thing that annoyed me the most was, okay, leave the stage, get this power, come back, and then make sure you don't lose it before you get to this one point. And yeah, that's my biggest problem with the Dark Matter trilogy is a lot of the gameplay is padded out through that. And even Mario wasn't above that. Some of the new Super Mario Bros. Games are like, go back to the stage, get this power up, hold on to it. Yeah. It really stinks.
If you want to be little Mario to get this last secret, you better just not get hit the whole way, or go back to three worlds and get the little mushroom.
I think we're better than that. Yeah. As a people, but just some other
things. Though I wasn't crazy about Milky Way Wishes, it's all worth it for the final boss for me, because Kirby's Adventure was the first one that had the final boss be a kind of, I mean, in there it's more of a Saturday morning sort of dark nightmare kind of abomination sort of thing, but here it just goes full crazy space cosmic, like Mark slicing himself in half to open a black hole. All these kind of insane effects going on while he's doing his horrible laughing the whole time. And it's just, all of it's just utterly, it just feels so climactic and so cool. But then even then, was the arena in the SNES version? The SNES version, the Super Nintendo version. Was the arena in that, or was that only in the DS? I don't remember.
I think there's the combat. I mean, there's the other versus-y things in there, but maybe the arena was just for Ultra. Man,
I played three of these back-to-back, and there were arenas in some of them.
Oh, sorry, Andrew. Yeah.
Yeah, Andrew?
Superstar had arena. The remake had an even...
Yeah, true
more
arena,
difficult
right?
one.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, it's been, this is the first time the arena has really taken shape in Adventure. There was like a boss rush mode, but this is like, you know, where you have like a lobby that you go into in between rounds and whatnot and can heal or get different powers.
Hmm.
This is where the true Kirby begins.
And there are a few, I mean, on the box it says, what, like 8 games in 1. Some of these are games in quotes because it's like, well, this isn't a game. This is something I played in between stages in Kirby's Adventure. Like Megaton Punch, again, it's more stopping meters. I'm a fan of this. And you're facing off opponents to, I think it's like 3 meters you're stopping in order to punch through some bricks on the ground to have the heaviest punch. And I love when it cuts away after you punch to show how much of the planet you've destroyed.
Yes.
It's just so good.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Just the more about showing off just the cosmic power of Kirby. And also, there's a variation of the quick draw game in Kirby's Adventure. It's Samurai Kirby. I like Cowboys more than Samurai, but it's still fun. And I like how, like we were talking about with the mic power-up, every time you do the quick draw on this, it's a different weapon.
Yeah.
It's a different, like, comedy weapon.
It's just a different gag. As somebody who loves sprites and cartoony cute sprites that, you know, that don't exist anymore, to know how many more were drawn for this game than were necessary just to make somebody go like, huh, look at that. That's a different drawing. Oh, he did that thing? I didn't expect that. Yeah. Like, just,
the pie did a face.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the pie. Yeah, it's fun. Like, these mini games stress me out sometimes, though. If I'm not playing it to move on to another stage, I just feel like we're just going into this on its own to play it as its own experience. But, Andrew, we have to move on to the next game. Are there any of the powers you want to highlight that are featured in Kirby Superstar? I know in the past episode, you talked a lot about the different powers that were featured in those games.
Well, I mean, like Stuart already mentioned, Yo-Yo and Plasma are like the two best ones, but I gotta, you know, shout out to Cook because Cook is just so funny.
Mm-hmm.
I like how, I don't know if it happens in this game, but when I was playing Star Allies, when you get the Cook power up, you also cook your friends, but then they jump out of the pot and they're okay. So you not only cook all the enemies
and
on screen.
They're just in there for flavoring.
Yeah, yeah. Just like, I thought I'd soak.
I can't see the Cook power without thinking of the original Smash Bros. Broad Trailer where Mario is like screaming in abject agony as he's pulled alive.
His hands are up like this.
Yeah, I love it. That is a classic.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
That is great.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is...
I'm quite partial to the bird power person. Because flying around as a bird is always fun.
Yeah, yeah. And I think this game, I forget if Kirby Dream Land 2 did this, but it made flying a lot easier in that before you'd have to hit up, but this one you can just keep hitting the jump button and you inflate and start flying around. Yeah, I do like that change. It's sort of like making Scrooge's pogo easier in the Game Boy DuckTales.
Though I know, Bob, you're against the auto swallow that was added to Forgotten Land.
I'm telling you, people, turn off the auto swallow. It's so satisfying to hit that button and just like pop the power down. It's great. That's all I'm saying about that.
Hardcore Gaming 101 podcast is on a mission to rank the top games of all time. I like the idea that when Bruce Wayne gets angry, he switches to the Batman voice.
Why do you have such a problem making boomerang shaped like a bat?
You mean jerk. Like Batman?
Not like Batman, just make it for me, Bruce Wayne. I can't even with this guy.
It's a Herculean task, and I'd be lying if I said it hasn't taken a toll on our cognitive faculties.
Most people would be happy to have a job during a global pandemic. Dennis...
Hardcore Gaming 101, twice a week, every week, right here on the HyperX Podcast Network.
Do you love Japan and video games? Well, so do we. We're Kinsey and Mark from Kyoto Indie Dev's Chuhai Labs. Join us twice monthly for games, silly Japan news, and all-around nonsense. We stink at making commercials.
We f***ing got this one, bro.
Be sure to stop by the Chuhai Labs Discord to chat about our games or ask us questions.
Chuhai Labs and the Nasty Labs Podcast. We're legally the best.
Let's move on to Kirby's Dream Land 3, a very late release for the Super Nintendo. I rented this thinking there's a new Super Nintendo game. Okay, I have a PlayStation. I'm about to finish Final Fantasy VII, but here's Kirby. November 27th, 97 in the United States, and March of 98 in Japan. And is this correct? Never in Europe. So
yeah, take that, Stuart.
Yes, Stuart. You were robbed of this game.
Yeah, well, you know what? I'm okay with not getting this one. It's all good. Hey, you just keep it.
Yeah, this and the next one are of a pair and not my favorite Kirby experiences, although I did... I really played through these for the first time. I dabbled in this, and I probably played through the first set of stages when I ran this, and I was like, it's not as fast and snappy as I like, but there's some cool stuff happening in this. So apparently the last first-party game for the SNES in the United States, and it uses the SA-1 chip, although to my eyes, there's not a lot of heavy lifting going on. Maybe it's using that chip to like just have more sprites or more complicated sprites, but there's not a lot of effects because this is 2 years after Yoshi's Island. Mm. And starting here, we can see like the path to Epic Yarn, really, where it's like, let's try out different things. It was never a realistic art style, but it's like, let's go for something, and they're going for something here. It looks better on an SDTV, obviously, but it's like a sketchy look, and like the characters are always like undulating and moving, and like the colors on their bodies are moving like they're animated. It's really neat.
So
it looks stunning, I think.
Yeah, I hadn't touched this game in a very long time until turning on the Switch last night again and playing it. I was reminded what I didn't like about it, especially after playing Superstar again, because I was like, this went back into Baby Town a little bit to me. It felt easier. It felt more for kids. But then as I played it, Yoshi's Island is my favorite Super NES game, and stylistically the color and softness of the design, like it's not exactly copying the look of Yoshi's Island, but it does have that crayon kind of sensibility. Like it feels a little like a coloring book, and the softness and understatedness of the character models really get to me. And of course I love Kirby. Kirby with powers is my preferred Kirby, but him having big animal friends, I also do love, and they're all adorable.
I don't think it's as successful as Yoshi's Island, but also Yoshi's Island was in development for like 5 years.
Yeah.
So they had a lot more time to tinker with that. But yeah, pastel-like crayon art style. Just take a look at a screenshot, or hey, it's on your Switch if you want to play it as a Superstar if you have a Nintendo Online. And this game, my own thoughts about it are this and the next game, I feel like the same interpretation of the same kind of ideas, maybe slightly different, but I feel like Superstar is just so snappy. It's just so fun to control Kirby. This game and the next one are just a little slower, a little pokier, and the puzzles in terms of the things you need to find in the levels, they're not as elegant as I want. And it took a lot of looking up solutions to things when I just kind of got stumped. And that's not what I'm going to Kirby to. And I played through Kirby Triple Deluxe recently, and it's like, okay, there are three things to find in this stage. Often I'll leave with two, but when I jump back in, it's like, oh, it's over there. Okay, I'm good. It was never the case with this game. If I missed something, I was like, all right, I have to go to GameFAQs because, oh, I have to leave the stage on the bird because the other thing wants to see the bird. Okay, sure. That's what really frustrated me about this. Do you have any thoughts about like the puzzly nature of this, Andrew?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, with the whole Milky Way wishes thing, you know, it really disrespects your time, but I do appreciate the more puzzly aspects of Kirby in this, you know, series of Dreamland games, especially when you add the complexity of the additional animals. So now you have six different animal friends, each interacting with powers differently. The combinations are just ridiculous.
Yeah, the addition. So Kirby's Dream Land 2 had three animal friends. This one adds three. And then you can combine your animal friend with the power that you currently have for a new power. for a lot of fun and often funny different attacks. And it feels like a lot of this does feel like it's trolling the player, though, because when I was playing through this, just trying out every different kind of combination, a lot of the attacks just feel like, well, this is funny, and this is funny to watch, but it's absolutely useless. So I feel like a lot of them are not meant to be used. Just like, oh, yeah, if I combine the cat with this, it's kind of funny, but I'm absolutely never taking this into a level. It's just kind of fun to watch.
And to know, and you can appreciate the craft that they actually bother, like, well, if we're going to have the animal friends and power-ups, then you were going to have to design multiple sprites for every combo of those things. Like, if you've got the umbrella and you're with the fish, like, it's got to look like this. You have to animate like that. That level of work and dedication to it, I really appreciate that.
I think there's a lot about this game that is laudable, but I find to actually play as an experience to play, I find it very lacking. I think the slowness is a big deal. Like, even at flying speed, you're slower than you are in, say, Kirby's Adventure. The levels felt very long, I thought. And to get to the end of a level and find that you've missed the condition for the item that you need to see the good ending is a real bummer. Like, I don't enjoy that kind of... I mean, it's Kirby Superstar. You have a similar level of, say, different skill variation. Probably fewer skills than you do in... Kirby's Dream Land 3 overall, but every single one of them is enormous fun to use and has loads of different applications. And in Dream Land 3, it will be like, to get this secret, you need to use this item on the block that has a picture of the item on it. So go and get it. Or it'll be yeah. like, you need to fulfill some arcane conditions. And you know what? I think that's fun. I like the idea of having puzzles that are that esoteric in a game. That tickles my sort of dizzy ivories, you know? I rather like that. But in practice, I'd rather play almost any of the Kirby platformers over this one, to be honest. It's just not for me. I respect it, but when you have a Kirby game where fighting the bosses isn't fun, then that's a Kirby game that's not for me, unfortunately.
Yeah, the special conditions to finish each stage. So you can finish a stage normally, but if you want to get the good ending and play the final bits, you have to get the special condition. Often it'll be somewhat straightforward. It's like, well, finish this mini game you found. But often the only clue is indicated by like the picture associated with the level. So it's like one of them is a mushroom and it's like, oh, these mushrooms I see in the level, I can't step on them because if I step on one, the mushroom at the end of the stage won't be happy and won't give me the little thing I need. And sometimes it'll be like a picture of like the female equivalent or the male equivalent of one of your animal friends. It's like, well, I need to take that animal friend to the end because the other version of it wants to see the animal friend.
Heteronormativity.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the gimmick here. And along with the combination of the powers, which I think the next game does in a less fun way, but this one is neat. It's also like very technical where it involves like so many buttons where I was forgetting like, okay, how do I do this again? Because it's like you use the A button to spit out a GUI if you want your pal GUI along for the ride.
Yes.
And that's how the second
Nobody
player can play.
GUI.
Yeah,
GUI is so weird.
I like that he that looks GUI. Like shit. Like, that's kind of what I like about GUI.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. He's like this horrible little Milhouse character who follows you around.
It is, yeah, it's the Milhouse version of Kirby.
Yeah, it's like, bleh. Like, is that fun? Bleh.
Kirby loves fishing with GUI. Yeah, you hit a button to spit out GUI, but there's also, like, you have to, like, if I'm riding the hamster and I see another power, I've got to, like, hit the select button to spit out the power. And then like suck it up and then swallow it with the hamster. Just like it's pretty complex to the point where I was like, okay, do I need to jump off this thing? Do I need to get on it? It's a lot to think about, and maybe just like one thing too many for a Kirby game. But I like the ambition in terms of the combination of powers and what you can do with them.
Maybe that too is why I bounced off it, because like that complexity, in Superstar, I felt like the density of ideas was so clear that it got me working on a higher level, but reaching the game there. But when this is such a soft style and just so like, it felt like a return to form of the Game Boy ones, that then finding out like, no, this actually is like almost a riddle at times of how to truly beat it. I wasn't ready for that level of engagement. And yeah, it's also like at the end of it, it's like, oh, but you didn't do this one thing. Come on. Like I much prefer, you know, I'm thinking Forgotten Lands all the time, but I do like in Forgotten Lands where you know what? If you see there's a duck and other ducks and maybe five ducks will follow you to their mommy, then you get an extra thing. But you didn't. The game won't go like, you didn't beat it. You didn't get all the duckies.
It's a lot more elegant in terms of like signaling to the player. Sorry, Stuart.
I was just going to say, plus, crucially, Forgotten Land literally tells you what to do. If you get to the end of a level, it will unlock another condition.
Yeah, it'll
tell
at least
you what the condition is.
I like
which
in,
is nice.
In Forgotten Land, it's question marks at the start. And if you discover it in your first playthrough, then hey, you're pretty cool. But at the end of it, of the level, it's like, all right, we're just going to tell you the three other things if you didn't do it, and you play it again right now if you want to. If you're going to feel like you won't get into heaven if this isn't 100%,
that's what I believe.
Yeah.
I mean, that just shows you where we've come in 25 years. Where I think like around 97 when this game is coming out, there is an anxiety by the developers. Like, is this game long enough? Games are getting longer and longer. People expect a certain amount of like play time. So if you buy this game for $60 in 1997, maybe you don't mind going back to a level six times to figure out where the hidden thing is.
I
feel like maybe that was their mentality for this in the next game, especially. It's like, there's nothing on the N64. What else are you going to play in the year 2000? You tell me, buddy. Beetle Racing Adventure? Any favorites of yours, Andrew, when it comes to the combination of the animal powers in Kirby? I believe it's the cat that like pushes Kirby around like you're cleaning like a Japanese floor in that very Japanese way where you're like running along the ground with a rag. I'm sure it's hell on your back. I've never tried it.
You know, it doesn't look so fun for anime school high schoolers to clean their classroom that way. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of them are just really nonsensical. So it's kind of hard to pick a favorite that, you know, either it's going to be useful or it's just completely sort of wacky. I do like the combination of Pitch the Bird and the spark power to make him like a little remote control bird. That's amusing.
That's cool.
But the cleaning ability overall, I think, is pretty neat, especially how it gets incorporated into the puzzles.
Can I shout out the fish plus the needle, because it's horrifying?
Yes, actually.
All the spikes come out the side of the fish and it's horrified.
The character of the animal friends and how they relate to Kirby is very funny, because it looks like a lot of the things you're doing with the fish are hurting it, because the fish, you're just sticking out of its mouth.
Yeah, the spark when you electrocute it.
Yeah.
The light bulb Kirby electrocuting the fish is very funny.
And you're always hurting their feelings too. Whenever you choose an animal friend out of the group, all the other ones just instantly sad.
Yeah, they're either sad.
Makes me feel bad. Makes me feel bad.
I think the cat is even like outraged. Like, what? You didn't choose me? like the way Kirby interacts with the animals is funny, because it's like, I believe the cat's just kind of like resting on him like he's a yoga ball, and I love just the idle animation of Kirby with like choo-choo on his head, because he's just like, head massage. He seems like very soothed by having this pink blob on his head, and like I think he's annoyed by having like the green bird or maybe the owl on his head, just like, this is not comfortable. Like, so even like with no power equipped, just how the animal friends just sit with Kirby, he has a different relationship with all of them, and it's very funny and cute. And
basically everything except for the gameplay is great.
Yes.
Like, and that's real crucial, unfortunately.
Like, and there's
that's
a high,
just my opinion. Others will disagree.
I think there's a high bar, Stuart, because of Sakurai and what he did with Superstar in the first two games, where I played a bunch. I played a bit of Dream Land 2. I think it plays a bit faster than the next two games in this trilogy by this director. This one and the next one are just a little too pokey for me. I got to the end of both of them, but by the end I was like, these levels are very long and I'm not even going to try to get these secrets on my own. I'm just going to go into the level with the fact telling me, okay, go here or bring this power into the level. It was cool to see a Kirby game in 97, when the Super Nintendo had long been dead, really. Anything else before we move on to Kirby 64, Andrew? Anything else we need to cover about this this game?
Not really. I mean, it does continue the quote-unquote Dark Matter saga here, where you find Zero as the secret final boss that actually emits the Dark Matter creature things.
And this game also ends with like a little shooter stage, although I don't think it's, if I recall correctly, you're not like zooming left to right. You're like kind of flying around a boss and shooting at it, the giant eyeball boss. I think that's correct.
Yeah, it's more like the fight at the end of Star Allies, I think, with Void Terminator, where it's a tiny bit more Star Fox-ish. Is that fair to say? I don't recall.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, this is like the giant one-eyed Dark Matter guy is going to be variants on that kind of design are going to be the bosses in the Dark Matter trilogy. let's move on to Kirby 64, the Crystal Shards, because it's the year 2000. PS2 is about to come out, but hey, you bought the Nintendo 64 and you got to play something. And they made a Kirby game for you, which is just all right. In terms of the amount I like these games, like Superstar is like way up here, and then a little bit of a downgrade for Kirby's Dream Land 3, and then a bit of a steeper downgrade for this one, because I don't think they had a lot of know-how with this hardware, and this was their first time making a Kirby game in 3D, although it plays like a 2D game. It doesn't have the same like fun feedback of other Kirby games. It's just like, even something as simple as like, I love in the other games where you turn to the stone instantly, like snap, you just fall to the ground. And this one, it's so slow and clumsy. Like, yeah, you turn to the stone so slowly, and then the game is just like, well, you were probably the stone when you hit the button, so we'll just kill this enemy next to you. It just it's not, it's like so swimmy and not as snappy as I expect. And I think that's because of the hardware and their inexpertise with it.
Yeah, which is shocking, because it's, you know, 4 years into the existence. It's released right before the fourth year of the N64 being around. So you would think they know what they're doing by there. Like, it's, I am not a big fan of Yoshi's Story. It really disappointed me. But on some level, I was like, well, it's, you know, it's relatively new in the N64 lifespan. But in when this game came out, I was not as ready to be as forgiving for a Kirby game like this. And on top of that, I was like, I was so used to Kirby games being like so cute in the 2D style. And at this point, they could not copy that in 3D. Like, I'd say, I really loved the 3D look of Kirby in the Wii U generation, but Forgotten Lands is the first time truly a 3D Kirby game has felt like as cute to me as a classic 2D Kirby. But that's just my taste. But
I was looking at what HAL made on the N64 before this, and it's Pokemon Stadium, which is just like a turn-based fighting game, mm-hmm. and the rules are already laid out for you.
Well, and it's just somebody else's game, and it's yeah. just letting you watch the fights in a different way, so yeah.
Not a lot to figure out there. There's Pokemon Snap, which is just on rails, so you don't really have to figure out, like, traversal for a character.
A good time, though. I had a nice time.
Yeah, it's not bad, and I hear that remake's good. I haven't played it, though. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, there's not a whole lot between that, but one of the games they worked on for the N64 after this, or probably during production, is Mother 3, and apparently they were having problems with the hardware then, so I don't think like HAL really knew how to work this hardware, and it's very apparent in this, where N64 games aren't pretty ever, but this feels especially below what I expect from HAL in terms of a Kirby game, and that could point to problems with development. Andrew, what are your thoughts on this one?
I think it kind of can be forgiven for a lot of reasons. You know, it was originally supposed to be for the 64DD. That didn't pan out. They had to make a lot of development changes. They obviously had a lot going on with, you know, Mother 3 and other games they were working on. But I think hardware-wise, too, you know, they couldn't flex their muscles like they could with the previous two games with making it as beautiful as they wanted to be. And textures on the N64 are just awful anyway. So I think...
yeah.
Maybe what we see in the lack of speed and performance is because they're trying to do what they can with, you know, actual polygons in lieu of textures. But who's to say?
Yeah, I feel like they're screwed from the beginning on an N64 with Kirby, because you're like, oh shit, he's a ball. You know how many polygons that is? We got to render a ball, because Kirby is not a 2D sprite. He's not like the cannonballs you see in Mario 64. They have to convincingly render a round character, and yeah. already it's like, well, that's half our polygons we can fit on the screen. What do we do now?
Well, I hadn't considered that. Yeah, what made him a more simple 2D sprite to make, because he's just a circle who is one major color. Meanwhile, you have like, yeah, a sphere that has to convincingly jump around. I mean, that probably too, I think it's to its benefit that the game is a 2.5D thing. I'm glad they didn't try to make their answer to Banjo-Kazooie or Mario 64, because they could barely get 2.5D to work in this thing. If they had an actual like fully open world for Kirby to jump around in, I think that was at least them understanding their limits to go with 2.5D. I was sad to not like. I only rented this game then, and it was, I was reading the online stuff about it, but I was one of those at that point very into the N64 scene, and it was my system. I picked it for the console war, so I was paying attention to it. And then this game was rumored forever. Like, it was shown for a very long time at the Space Worlds. It'd be just like, okay, another Space World, another Kirby 64. Is this game ever going to come out? Same with Super Mario RPG 2. I think of these two as similar games because they would get shown together for years with little movement towards a release.
A lot of it points to a rushed release because, like you said, Andrew, it was originally designed for the disk drive, didn't come out for the disk drive. It wasn't like one of eight games to come out for that. And even as late as E3 1999, somebody had a video of someone videotaping Nintendo's booth, and they were videotaping Kirby 64, and like half the footage for the Kirby 64 trailer was Kirby and Smash Brothers. So they were like, we don't even have enough to show you in an E3 trailer. Maybe it just looks so bad we can't show you what we want to show you. But yeah, it feels rushed. And a lot of what's missing in the game is seen up front, which is very disappointing, because on the title screen, it's like, here are all your pals. Waddle Dee, this is like the rehabilitation of all of your enemy friends. So Waddle Dee's a pal now. Adeline is now like a human character, and she's the artist. By the way, I don't like when humans are in Kirby or humanoid things, because we got Adeline. We also have Ribbon, the fairy. Anything that looks like a human, I don't want in this world. That's my philosophy.
It's what I really hate about Right Back At You, the cartoon series. Oh. Man. Hanging out with too many humanoids in that.
We'll talk about that, I think, maybe in our next episode. It's coming up. But, so on the title screen, Waddle Dee, Adeline, King Day-Day-Day, they're there, and then they're at the end of every stage just waiting for you to have a picnic, and they were meant to be playable. And as were the animal friends. So yeah, that element of the game that's missing is just kind of taunting you, where it's like, yeah, there's four people on the screen. I got four controller ports. Yo, Goober, where's the Day-Day-Day? When can I play as him?
It's so obvious when you see that picnic stage and the game. Yeah, it is. This was should have been a four player game. That was the best. Insane. I guess if it sucked, then they shouldn't have done. Then it's good they didn't do it, because if it would have played worse, then I guess cut it.
It would have made it even slower. Stuart, sorry.
They didn't get to be playable until Star Allies, where they just crammed everyone in, basically. So that was nice of them to, I guess, remember that this game exists in a way.
That's true.
So, you know, someone has to, and I'm glad that they did.
Star Allies is really fun, and it has this scrapped idea where it's just like, you can play as Kirby and three of anybody you want, basically, even like past the extra characters from old games. If you buy the game now, you can get like all the other extra characters unlocked, like all your friends from Squeak Squad, they're here.
Hooray, and this Crystal Shards game, it brought me down too, just because like it felt like Kirby wasn't equal to him getting a crummy game by 2000. It felt like, oh, this guy, he's not on the same level as the other Nintendo stars to me anymore. I felt bad for I pitied the little guy. Though I was still having a good time on the Game Boy with the side games, you know, and around the same time. But yeah, I just remember, and then if I had known what I learned from Andrew's notes about the Evangelion influence in the year 2000, I would have been more excited to play this game and would have played it to the end just to see basically an angel you fight at the end of the game.
The problem for me with 64, and this probably seems quite shallow, so I'm going to explain it briefly. I don't think graphics are more important than gameplay, but I do think they are important. Like, not necessarily it has to look amazing, but the visuals have to fit what you're playing. Otherwise, you get this disconnect. It doesn't work. And I think Kirby 64 is hideous. I think it looks so bad.
Yeah, I guess.
But I honestly find it difficult to enjoy.
We're being. Just,
you're never going to see anything interesting looking or cool looking. It's all going to look like this.
We're being polite, so, but I think hideous is a good description. And especially, I'm playing on the Wii U, and they make it like darker so I don't get a seizure or something. So it looks even muddier
and
worse.
To see it as well.
Yeah. But it's just like.
You don't get to see it as much. That's a good thing.
I played about 3 hours of this yesterday just to power through to the end for this podcast. It's like, by the end, I felt felt kind of sick. Just like, do I have cataracts? What's happening?
Yeah, there were some N64 games that left me feel that way. I feel like Mischief Makers, which I think is a better game than this, but I remember it leaving me going like, I played too long. I need to look at this ceiling for a bit.
But also, like, Kirby seems just like sick and lethargic in this game because he doesn't move that fast, and this is like the first game where it's like, Kirby can't fly that much anymore, kids. Kirby needs to sit down for a bit.
Just a minute, guys. Kirby, yes, give me a sec. I'll catch up with you.
Or doing anything.
Exactly. That's just some wino. That's not Kirby. But yeah, I don't know, Andrew. Like, he's not fun to control. And what I associate with Kirby games, like, even if they're not as challenging as I like in a game, it's just so much fun to sit down and like slide around with Kirby and have him jump off of things. And like in previous games, I think in Superstar, like Sakurai made it so like if you landed on enemies, you would hurt them. And in this game, like, no, that's not true at all. If you land on enemies, you're hurt. I feel like Kirby's more vulnerable than ever, which leads to some very frustrating things, which is surprising for a Kirby game to be frustrating. It's very odd.
I think it's interesting that we've talked this long about the game and haven't mentioned the gimmick at all, which suggests that it's left almost no impression on us, which is the combining different abilities to create new abilities thing, which is only in this game, I believe, and maybe Squeak Squad.
That's...
Unless we did mention it and I blanked it.
No, we didn't mention it. I think we might have mentioned it in the Kirby's Dream Land 3 discussion, but it's sort of like that, but you don't get like cool sprites and fun animals to play with. Instead, it's basically you swallow an ability, you can hit the L button to spit it back out and hold it as a star, and if you throw that star into an enemy, it'll change into a combo star with your previous power and that enemy's power. You can also suck up an enemy and spit at another enemy, I believe, to get the combo power as well. But much like in Kirby's Dream Land 3, it's all about combining powers. But in this one, I feel like, again, like I think inelegant is a good word for a lot of things that happen in this game. It's pretty inelegant in that... it's hard to execute sometimes because it's like, okay, I've got the ice power. I want to throw it at the bomb guy. You throw the power, but guess what? His bomb hits it. It's gone. You don't have it anymore. Now go back and get the ice power again. Sorry, go ahead, Stuart.
It's a 2D game that's not truly 2D. So when you're throwing something, it might go above or below an enemy even. Like it's not... I think it has that Klonoa thing where the level kind of curves around sometimes. So it's not entirely precise.
Doesn't help. Though it's not as like controlled in its camera as Klonoa is, so it can be even more frustrating. Yeah.
And I think that was sprites as well, Klonoa. I think that was 2D sprites of the first one anyway.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like Nintendo just needed a game, and this game was having development problems, and they just said, make what you can of it, get it out for summer of 2000. It just has like generally an unfinished quality, and just by the end of the game, it's like in the last set of levels, the first level in the last set of levels is just like the first level again, but with different colors. And I'm like, what are you doing? Just don't do this to me. You're a Kirby game.
I mean, as far as a release calendar in a fiscal year, it did the job that happened, you know, the previous two systems as well, of like that. Miyamoto took his A-team to work on the launch games for the system that comes out the next year, or the year before that, and so you got to spackle it over with some Kirby. Like, you count on Hal, make us a Kirby to come out in 2000 because the other guys are working on the next system. And so this is one of the worst time. They still had to put it out, but it was one of their lower things. I think they just didn't know what they handle the transition to 3D worse than most did. I mean, I guess in the N64 generation, Metroid handled it worse because it just didn't come out. They're like, nope, next system, skipping this one. It just can't happen.
And there wouldn't be a 3D Kirby game again until, I guess, Air Ride probably counts. But what is the next true 3D Kirby game? Is it Nightmare?
Canceled GameCube one.
Is it the Wii one? Is it the Wii one?
Oh, Return to Dreamland? Was a 2D one. No.
I mean,
Forgotten Land.
Okay.
There was a 3D one planned for the GameCube that got canceled. That might actually have been 2D now that I think about it.
Sorry, I wasn't specific enough. I meant like a 2D Kirby game with 3D graphics, because I think this was it.
Oh.
And they didn't do it again until a decade later on the Wii with Return to Dreamland. I think that might have been it.
Yeah. No, yeah, I think, yeah. And then on the 3DS, then it pretty much was all polygons. Like, it was the end of the 2D yeah. sprites were dead once more yeah. by the time it was time for the 3DS.
Having just played Triple Deluxe and Star Allies, it's like, oh, those games feel like the Sakurai 2D games. They're just as snappy, but they just couldn't make it work with this hardware and their expertise and with this kind of a rushed and unfinished project.
Now, Triple Deluxe rules hard, and so after playing it, now that you've reminded me of it, I hate Crystal Shards even more. I'm like, oh man, that's Triple Deluxe, that's the 3D 2.5D game.
It's maybe like mildly controversial. I think that Kirby is actually in its golden age now and has been for close to a decade, because ever since Return to Dreamland came out, I really don't think they've made a bad one or even one that's less than great. And when Forgotten Land came out, it's not my favorite Kirby. There are things about it I don't like, but it is awesome. It's a great game.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me think, if the sequel to Forgotten Land is as good as Planet Robobot was compared to Triple Deluxe, which I loved anyway, then we're in for an all-timer, my dear friends. We're in for an all-timer.
Yeah, I think...
The best is yet to come.
I think so. And I want to know what Andrew's thoughts on this are, because my own thoughts are, like, I think I fell out of Kirby not just because of my income, but... In the 2000s, Kirby games, this really kicked off a kind of a darker era, but there were quality things. Like, I think the best things that came out of the 2000s were Nightmare in Dreamland and the DS remake of Triple Deluxe, or sorry, the DX remake of Superstar. But there's the Amazing Mirror, there's Squeak Squad. Those are not made by HAL. Maybe there's some supervision, but I believe those are farmed out to different companies. Sakurai is too busy with Smash Brothers to really do a lot of Kirby work. But it does feel like you said, Stuart, maybe Return to Dreamland for the Wii was the kicking off of like the new, better era of Kirby. And they finally
So all I was going to say is Canvas Curse was great. That was a bit of an outlier for me.
Yes, that was the one that pulled me back. That was the one that pulled me back.
That's a fantastic game.
I didn't have anything else to play on the DS, and it had gotten marked down. I was like, okay, the reviews are kind of good. And yeah, that was when I finally really... And it was the first stylus-driven game that I actually, like, for real, just loved. Like,
yeah, and that was made by HAL. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess it was small enough that they could easily pump that out for the DS. But it did seem like, the aughts were the dark days of Kirby. I guess he was popular because he had an anime for the first time.
Blech.
Yeah, but, I mean, hey, it was for 5-year-olds.
I know. they should have been aiming it at 21-year-olds.
Exactly.
You know?
I wanted the edgy Kirby anime. Yeah. But I think this is a great time. We were just dumping all over Kirby 64. If you were a kid and you like this, let me know, because as a near 40-year-old playing this, I was just like, I had no interest in this for a reason. Andrew, are we being fair? What are your thoughts on this one before we wrap up, Kirby 64?
You know, I knew this before this episode, I would have to try and defend this game. And it's a difficult one to defend. I already mentioned all the development issues, and, you know, when I was replaying this game, I found it easier to sort of put my mindset back in the days of that 2D to 3D transition, where you have that weird evolution of, okay, well, how do we do this? And I don't think they get enough credit for... Yeah, this isn't a great game, but they made the right choice to try and keep Kirby 2D, because going to 3D would have been so much worse. I mean, if you look at how the game mechanics work, you'd have to sacrifice something no matter what to make it fully 3D. Like Mega Man with Legends sacrificed the platforming. Even Mario 64 sacrificed the ability to shoot fireballs. Like that sort of like shooting mechanic, which is just similar to inhaling with Kirby, it just doesn't play well. And, you know, Castlevania Symphony of the Night got a lot of credit for staying 2D. And then you see it move into 3D, and each successive one is just slightly better, you know, moving from 64 to Lament of Innocence to Lords of Shadow. Like, they're all not very good. Each one's a little bit better than the last. And, you know, I think Kirby just knew what it had to do from the beginning for this segment of games, is just keeping it 2D. And, you know, Sega still hasn't learned that with Sonic, where Generations is the best, you know.
Oh, no.
Sorry, I know I'm going to get a lot of hate, but
there's a Sonic
fan. Generations, 50% of it is like the best 3D Sonic game, and the rest all just not that
the
good.
The Sonic Leica has looked on.
No, I like the 2D stuff in Generations.
I also like Castlevania 64, so what are you going to do?
Sicko.
No, you're right. If we putting ourselves back in the year 2000 and being like super online, super into games, really starting to get into like the retro scene, which is like, what did I play 10 years ago? That's retro. But yeah, like the 2D was just like, oh, yuck. Are you kidding me? You're making a 2D game? Everything is 3D now in the future. And by sticking to their roots, it was a gutsy move. I think they were allowed to do it because like the N64 just needed games.
Yeah.
And they couldn't sink any more development time into this. But yeah, it was rare to see a 2D game to the point where like a magazine would be like, oh, a 2D game. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Klonoa, Symphony of the Night. These are just, oh, the Tumba. These are just weird experiences now. Everything should be in 3D. But okay. Hey, it's a throwback to the ancient days of 1990.
You know, and Rare was pumping out the 3D platformers so much that it's like Kirby... I would hate for them to have to try to follow that kind of model, because I don't think Hal could do it. You know, they'd never. And rather, if the market demanded, if they had to release something like for the portfolio of Nintendo, then I'm glad they at least stuck to 2.5D-ish for that, instead of trying to flush away everything that people love about a mainline Kirby game just to fit 3D. Like that, you know, it wasn't a Gex situation or a Bubsy situation or whatever, where they're just like, we have to be 3D. Who cares how it plays? It must be 3D, like as in full 3D movement. Yeah. So
we ended up with a Mega Man X8 situation, then it could have been a Mega Man X7 situation.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm sure this was viewed as like a baby game for being in 2D in the year 2000. But when I was playing it, I was like, this is the most difficult Kirby game. And I'm getting very frustrated by some of these levels. And that's not like, I don't think a lot of that was intentional, but I was like, wow, this is a difficult game for a Kirby game.
Yeah. But hey, I appreciate the Neon Genesis Evangelion stuff in it. Like O2 looking like an angel, just straight up, just one of the angels from, I believe, episode 23. It's I like that.
There are some Evangelion
the
fans.
The Longinus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was removed from the game. It turned into a cactus. Yeah, like I should point out that the Dark Matter trilogy was directed by Shinichi Shimomura, who had been at HAL since the early 90s and had worked on almost all the Kirby games up until then. I don't know if I agree with his vision for the series, and he has not been credited with anything since the year 2002, so maybe he left out of shame for disappointing me personally. But that's the guy who was behind it.
Yeah,
and
a strong-worded letter did work.
I was like, I'm just going to send this letter to Japan and hope somebody gets it. But I think the guy who's in charge of the games, and I think he's directed like the most recent like 3 or 4, like Sakurai or whoever found the right person. I think it's like Shinya Kumazaki. I believe that is the person who has been directing the more recent games. Yeah, he is the one. And I think they found the right person. Since Superstar Ultra, he has been the director and then general director. So I think under his reign, Kirby has really, really thrived. And I think Shimomura was trying to turn it into a game it really wasn't, but for the sake of making a longer experience. And I understand the pressure there. So I hope he's doing well. I don't know where he is right now. anything else we need to cover? That was Kirby Part 2. I'm kind of surprised we got an entire episode out of three games, but these are three very interesting games. Even the ones that are lesser are still fun to talk about, just to remember where we were when they were released. Any final thoughts from you, Andrew? Anything we need to talk about to cover about these three? And any thoughts about the future of this Kirby podcast series? Where are we going to be heading next?
Well, I think the big takeaway is, you know, gameplay-wise and design-wise aside, I think everyone can agree that the music is just always awesome in every game.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't call out the music outside of the first game, really, but it's all really good. Even on the N64, there's still some good songs they pump out of that thing.
Mm-hmm. No,
I'm looking forward to the next one where we're covering ones that, you know, aren't necessarily as touched by HAL and, quite frankly, are not really ones that I'm a huge fan of. But,
ooh, you this know, is exciting.
There'll be your time to shine, Stuart.
I'm so excited.
And this I promise you we will talk about the anime, because one of these games was released hastily because they're like, there's an anime out, we need a Kirby game. Adventure.
Wasn't it? Yeah.
Well, you know, Bob, you said you're surprised how long it took for us to talk about three games, but really, it's more like 10 games in one.
That's true. Yeah. Well, what a bargain. Yeah. And this episode is quite a bargain for all of you out there if you're a patron. But yes, that's another episode of Retronauts. Before I wrap up, Andrew, you'll be back very soon for part three, but is there anything else you want to promote? Do you want people to find you online? Let us know.
No, I don't really do anything. So, you know, I will say everything that you guys do with, you know, Talking Simpsons, What a Cartoon, and even Stuart with Animani Chat and Artsylvania, all that stuff is really great. And if anyone listening has not dipped into any of those other podcasts, you're missing out. So,
oh, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I will gladly take extra plugs for myself.
Yes, yeah.
We really appreciate it.
Me too.
And thanks to you, Andrew, for a great topic. I'm glad to be cruising through these games very slowly, because back when I did this in 2011, it's like, let's just do every one in one episode. breathlessly. But yeah, this has been another episode of Retronauts. This is part of the HyperX Podcast Network, and we're also supported by all the great fans and patrons out there at patreon.com/retronauts. If you want to support the show and get all these episodes 1 week at a time and ad-free, please sign up at the $3 level at patreon.com/retronauts. But buddy, there is also a $5 level. When you sign up for that, you get the early access, but also you get 2 full-length bonus episodes every month. And we've been doing this for over 2 years now, so there's now 50-plus full-length bonus episodes that you have not heard if you're not a patron at the $5 level at patreon.com/retronauts. And there is also a weekly column and podcast by contributor Diamond Fight. You can hear that at the $5 level as well at patreon.com/retronauts. Stuart, how about you? You are a Retronauts contributor, but I know you've got other stuff happening. Please let us know about that.
Oh, yes. I'd like to also plug What a Cartoon and Talking Simpsons.
No,
I'm joking.
No, you can't
great.
Take it back.
They are great. Animani Chat, I suppose, is currently my other main podcast, which is a sort of a ripoff of Talking Simpsons. Sorry. It's going through every single episode of Animaniacs. Now, the secret is I hate Animaniacs. I think it sucks. However, recently, I have come to slightly like it. So, as you can see, there's been a character development as it went on there. I also do a podcast called The Dillcast, where we review every single Dilbert comic ever made and slowly go insane because it's the worst thing ever. You can listen to that. That's a lot of fun. It's mostly just an excuse to talk complete garbage, but, you know, that's a laugh. And you can find me on Twitter at Chupacabra, but I don't recommend it because I tweet every single thought I ever have, and they're all awful. Writing on Retronauts and Nintendo Life, and I do some Retronauts episodes myself, usually UK gaming focused, and with lots and lots of rambling.
I want to see you chart the decline of Scott Adams' mental faculties on your podcast over time.
Okay, if we can stop charting the decline of our own mental faculties while we're trying to read his terrible comic, but yeah.
And Henry, how about you?
Well, everybody said it already, but yes, me and Bob also host a bunch of podcasts, Talking Simpsons and What a Cartoon, chief among them. Talking Simpsons, we go through every episode of The Simpsons in chronological order. We're in season 13, but also season 3 right now. And What a Cartoon, once a month we cover an animated series super duper in depth. Coming up soon, I think if you're a fan of Beast Wars, I think you'll have a good time on our podcast network as well. At patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons, you get tons of extras of us covering King of the Hill, Futurama, The Critic, Batman the Animated Series, Mission Hill, and I dare say we have gone fully Looney Tunes because we did... The edit isn't done yet. I'd say it's at least 6.5 hours long, one podcast about Roger Rabbit. So, Who Framed Roger Rabbit? Just that movie. Not even all the side stuff with Roger Rabbit. Just that.
That's a second podcast.
Yeah. So
coming very soon.
So you can only hear that in full if you go to patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons to sign up. And hey, follow me on Twitter at HENEREYG.
And as for me, I've been your host for this one, Bob Mackey. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. But that's it for us this week. We'll see you again very soon for another episode of Retronauts. Take care.